Welcome to the Data Up Podcast. My name is Brian Ward, the creator and host of the Data Up Podcast. I am a coach, Marine Corps veteran, speaker, husband, and you guessed it, a dad. Are you ready to be inspired to be the best dad you can be for your family? This show will provide you with the tips, tools, and strategies to do just that. Are you a dad just going through the motions? Or are you looking to really elevate your dad game to the next level? Truth is, it is a blessing to be a dad. This is a responsibility we must take seriously. In the end, how do you want to be remembered? I hope you want to be remembered as a phenomenal dad. Your legacy starts in the home, not outside the home. If you're really ready to elevate your dad game, then make sure you bang that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. Now, let's get started. Dad up. Welcome to another episode of Dad Up, everyone. Thank you guys very much for joining me. I have a good dude on the show today. He's not only a veteran, which I'm very happy to say that he's a veteran and proud of that, but he's doing remarkable things. And some of the things that he's doing right now, I'm actually very interested in because it's stuff that I'm interested in what he's doing. Things that he's doing, I am interested in because they're similar to what I like to do. And that's running. He's a runner. And I love that about him. But my good friend Jason Wood has joined me on Dad Up. Welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me. I've been following you for a while now, and I'm just super excited to be on.
Yeah, that's true. We've been following each other for a while. And I was telling him before we started recording, I'm like, I don't know why I haven't had you on yet. But he's a real, when he says follow, I mean, he's an avid follower. Like he comments on stuff. I mean, like he's an active follower on my page, which I really, really appreciate. But he's a combat veteran. He's a runner. He's a husband. He's a dad. Just everything that aligns with what I am myself, a veteran, a runner, a husband, a dad, all those things. So we have similarities and I'm very, very happy to get into this conversation, but, Jason, for my listeners who may not know who you are, let's talk a little bit about your back history, kind of how you grew up, the things you kind of did when you were growing up, you know, obviously your military service, and then kind of what you're doing now. And obviously this is a dad podcast, so I want to know about your family as well.
Yeah. So I grew up here in Virginia, pretty much my whole life. And then in high school, I really fell in love with the sport of football. I played football 4 years in high school, and ended up getting a scholarship out to a small school in Kentucky, called the University of the Cumberlands. So went out there, before that happened though, my parents had me when they were teenagers. So money and trying to figure out funding for college was a struggle. So the way I kind of get into the military was I signed a ROTC scholarship, Reserve Officer Training Corps scholarship, my senior year of high school. And this is, mind you, 1999, 2000, so before 9/11 happened. So signed an ROTC scholarship that paid for most of the tuition and football, paid for room and board and everything. So was able to go to school for free. When my sophomore year came around, that's when 9/11 happened. And I knew that potentially my postgraduate plans from college were going to be a little bit different than originally scheduled and planned. But I played 4 years of football, got out, graduated college in May of 2004, got my commission as a second lieutenant in the Army the same day, and then fast-tracked it immediately to Fort Eustis right after graduation for my officer basic course, which has lasted about 6 months. Graduated that in September of 2004 and then was out the door to Iraq in October. Mm-hmm. So did back-to-back-to-back tours, deployed 1 year in 04 to 05, came back for 8 months, did another 1 year tour from 05 to 06, came back for another year, and then did another 1 year deployment from 08 to 09 and did different things the whole time I was out there, mainly focused around transportation, logistics, and was deployed, you know, all over the country of Iraq. I know Iraq much better than I know our own country at this point. My last job in the Army was I was an aide to a two-star general. Got out of the Army shortly after that job ended. On my last day in the military was actually September 11th, 2011. Oh, wow. So the anniversary of 9/11. and then became a defense contractor after that, working anything from business development, marketing, all the way to IT program management. So I've been doing that for the last 12 years now. And between that, all that wonderful time, met the mother of my daughter, Camilla. I met her in October of 2011, shortly after I got out. And then we had Camilla in 2014. And so Camilla is 9 years old. So she's my only daughter, my only child. And love her to death. I'm kind of in a single dad role at this point where her and I, my ex and I split time with my daughter about 50-50. And then otherwise, the running thing has been a big part of my life. But I think what really stemmed me getting into running and fitness as a whole was shortly after I got out of the military, I started really noticing struggles with mental health, particularly depression, post-traumatic stress, anxiety, those kind of different things. And it took a while for me to finally step out of the shadows and ask for help and really reach out and try to work on myself. And during that time, that was the time my ex and I split. We were just having a really tough time with everything going on with my own mental health and then the relationship as a whole. And so that was kind of the kick in the butt for me to go find help. And that's what I did. And then as time grew along, I found solace in the sport of ultra running, specifically when COVID happened. I found myself with the gyms closed and everything else going out and just running, you know, more and more and more. And then ultimately wanted to challenge myself with doing everything from, you know, 12, 13 hour races to 24 hour races to, you know, running 48 hours on a treadmill. So that's what I've been doing in the meantime and trying to do it for good causes while I'm at it. So most of the things I do are in partnerships with veteran nonprofits where we can raise some funding for them and do good things. So that's in a nutshell kind of what I've been doing over the last couple of years of my life.
Wow. Well, first of all, you know, I told you this before that we started recording, but I'll tell you again, thank you for your service and thank you for going over to, you know, really, really tough parts of the world to try to protect our country. It's remarkable to me. You know, for me, I spent 4 years in the Marines, and fortunately, I say unfortunately, I didn't get an opportunity to go into combat because I really wanted that opportunity to do that. But I did serve overseas. I spent 6 months in Japan on a tour. And then shortly before I got out, I was literally 2 months, maybe 2 months before I got out, I got orders to go to Guantanamo Bay to help take care of prisoners and stuff that we had there. And it's funny, you're not supposed to get orders to go, you know, for those of you that haven't been in the military, you're not supposed to get orders to go anywhere when you have less than 6 months left in the military.
Yeah.
And when I got these orders, when I had 2 months to go, I got these orders. I was like, there's got to be some mistake. They're sending me to Guantanamo Bay for 6 months when I only have 2 months to go in the service. Like, what in the world's going on? So I went to my commanding officer and he's like, you know, you got the orders, you're going to have to do it. And I'm like, this is just weird. That doesn't seem right. So, you know, when you're in the military, you're kind of at their mercy. And make a long story short, I ended up going through the whole checkout process, get to the final stages of checking out where I was at, which is here in Southern California. And they said, wait a minute, we have an issue here. We don't think you're the person that's supposed to be on these orders because you have 2 months to go. And I said, yes, that's what I've been trying to say the whole time. And turns out they had my social security number linked up to another Brian Ward that was supposed to go. And so they had a major shift and they had to fix it and correct it. And I had to end up going and checking back in all the places that I just checked out of. so I ended up not going because it was the wrong guy. They had the wrong dude to go. But anyways, I digress.
Yeah, I've heard some fun stories like that in the past too. So you're not the first.
Yeah.
But
when you're when you raise your right hand and you give that oath, man, you are at their mercy and they got you hook, line, and sinker. So now I encourage everybody, if you have an opportunity to go in the service, I encourage you go in the service because it is an honor and a privilege to be able to do that for your country. But you know, for you, thank you very much for doing what you do, especially after 9/11. I went in because of Kuwait. I mean, not Kuwait. I went in because of Saudi Arabia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So,
I went in because of that whole incident, but I was, anyways. So I tried to talk my boys into, I have two boys. I tried to talk them into going into the service. They will never do it, which is fine. But it paid for my college, you know, it paid for my college. I went to school, got a degree and military paid for it. So,
yeah, no, I was able to get my bachelor's degree because of the military. I used my post 9/11 GI Bill for my master's degree. And I got that in disaster relief logistics. And so, yeah, I mean, I got an opportunity, one of my last jobs, to be a company commander. And that was one of the key jobs that I wanted when I was in the service was, the company command position, just because if you've served in the military as an officer, there's key positions that you really want to have and appreciate having along the way. And company command was one of them. Platoon leader was obviously one of the rewarding positions as well, but company command and having the responsibility of 200 plus soldiers and all that equipment and everything. When you're in it, it kind of seems overwhelming and there's just a lot of things going on and you feel like you're babysitting some cases and it's a lot of different responsibilities that you hold, everything from, you know, the hand receipt and the millions of dollars of equipment to, you know, people's lives, obviously. And then you have UCMJ action, which you can render judicial type decisions upon people that when they mess up, you know, pop hot for a peep test and things like that. So a lot of different things. But looking back at it, it was the most rewarding because I get messages to this day from former soldiers that thank me for, you know, leading them in a certain direction. And a lot of times you'd have somebody getting out of the military and I completely understood where they're coming from, you know, served back to back to back to back deployments and the op tempo was so high and they just needed a break from it. And I always encouraged them to go out and take advantage of what the military had to offer, whether it be tuition assistance or post 9/11 GI Bill or, you know, financial planning, all the different things that they provide free of cost. You know, I encourage people to do that because it really could be a life changer. Go out and do, you know, get your CDL license for truck drivers before you leave the military, things like that. And then the thanks I get from former soldiers and things like that is just, it's a blessing. And I always tell them they made me who I was as a person, as a commander, as everything I became as a man and a father, even just as I was coming through the service. So yeah, it's a rewarding thing. And definitely I agree with you. If you can take advantage of the situation and the different, things that they afford to you, definitely do it.
Yeah. Why did you get out? I'm just curious. Like I got out because I just felt like it was, you know, I did my 4 years and I felt like, I was ready to move on. It wasn't, when I did go to check out of the base for the final time, the commanding officer said, "Hey, why don't you want to reenlist?" And I said, "I just feel like I'm ready to move on, ready to go live what we call in the military, what we call the civilian life, ready to go move on." The commanding officer looked at me and he said, "Well, what if we offer you a $17,000 signing bonus if you reenlist?" Now for me, I'm 22, 23 years old. I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. Right. I'm like,
So
I told him, I said, would I get that signing bonus for 4 years? And he said, "No, you'd have to reenlist for 6 years." And I said, "Well, I already spent 4 years. If I reenlist for six, that's 10 years. I might as well stay in for an additional 10 to retire." And he goes, "That's kind of the point." And I go, "Yeah, I think I'm going to pass." So I ended up passing on that $17,000 signing bonus to get out because I was ready. But what about you?
Yeah.
Why did you get out?
Yeah, I think I was ready too. I was originally, my ROTC scholarship said that I had 4 years active, 4 years of IRR, which is Individual Ready Reserve, which we always referred to as the black cloud, especially during that time frame, because they could call you back at any moment. Mm-hmm. You're out of the military, but you're not really released yet. They can still call you back, but
you're on probation.
Yeah, due to the situation that was going on with Iraq and Afghanistan at that time, it was a high probability that you were going to get yanked back. So I ended up doing my 4 years active. And then right around that time, they did a very similar thing for the officer side, which is the first time I remember them ever doing it, at least in the time I was in, was they offered bonuses to certain MOSs for the officer side and to keep you in. And at that point, the MOS that I was in, the 88 series, we were doing convoys, we were gun trucks, we were doing all that kind of fun stuff on the routes of Iraq and Afghanistan, and getting hit with IEDs and explosive, foreign projectiles, all those different things, that we got one of the higher tier reenlistment bonuses, basically, because of the danger of the job. And so I ended up signing on for an additional 3 years, $35,000 that time. Oh, wow. Yeah. And so, but it really wasn't the thing that kind of kept me in, though. I had kind of made that decision early on, and within the four years that I was active, like really active without the contract requirements. And it was primarily due to the fact that I wanted that company command. I wanted to have that experience before I would ultimately leave the military. I definitely didn't think that the military was going to be my career, but it was something that I wanted to get enough out of the military, the experience and everything that made me kind of worthwhile on the outside to the civilian sector. And then when I got out of company command, I just happened to be afforded the opportunity to serve 18 months with a two-star general that, Army two-star, was in charge of different organizations. I got to travel with him all over the world. He was the greatest mentor that I've probably ever had, just one-on-one, that's outside of my own family members. He taught me so much about just life in general, not only just the military, but just different things in life. I traveled with him on, private military jets all over the world, and got just intimate conversations with him about life and fatherhood and being a husband and all the different things that he, in my mind, was just very good at. And so when it came time to the extra 3 year, 35,000 bonus time came to an end, I knew at that moment, kind of like you, that if I did just decide to move on and do something else, I was going to get promoted to likely, because I was a captain at the time, promoted to major. I was probably going to end up spending another year or two in the military. And then from there, you're at 10 and you might as well stay for the 20. And so it was right around that time that I decided I had done everything that I could possibly ever imagine wanting to do in the military. Came away with it with two bronze stars, came away with it with an officer of the year, came away with it with just a lot of knowledge that I had learned from being several deployments, platoon leader, company commander, an aide to a two-star. I don't think there could have been anything else in the military, except for probably battalion command, where you have leadership responsibilities of over a lot of more people. I think I had just done everything that I had desired at that point.
Again, thank you for your service. And for me, it was kind of the same thing. It was just like I was ready to move on. And sometimes that decision's hard to make for you. It was hard to make for me. It was probably a little bit easier. Needless to say, you got through it. Now you talk about mental health struggles and the challenges. Yeah. I mean, that there are veterans now, there are active military personnel now that struggle with the mental health challenges, PTSD, different things like that, whether they were in combat or not. Did you notice that becoming prevalent for you while you were in, or did it really start to take effect when you had gotten out?
I think it was, looking back, it was noticeable, I think, during the time I was in the military, but it really didn't hit me until I had left the military and became a civilian, and then started noticing as I surrounded myself with people that weren't from the military, it really hit hard. And then after the year after I got out of the military, I think I went 7 or 8 consecutive years where I had lost a former soldier that I had either been a platoon leader for or a company commander for from to suicide. I lost two twin brothers. They were under my in my company when I was company commander. They took their lives 1 week apart. Things like that, and it really made me struggle with relationships. I think my relationship with my my daughter's mother really suffered from me trying to figure out who I was again, post military, trying to find standing in civilian life. Because when you're in the military, especially when you get in at a young age, like 18, 19, 20 years old, that's kind of become your identity for most of your life. And then when you get out, you're kind of faced with this question of who am I and what, mm-hmm. what do I want in life? And, you know, mm-hmm. what do I like to do? And those kind of different things. And there's not that support system. You look around your neighborhoods and there's not a lot of neighborhoods anymore where you feel a brotherhood, sisterhood type feel. And that's what you get in the military. When you're in the military, you're the people to your left and right are willing to lay down their life for you. And you're constantly together. You have the dark sense of humor in a lot of cases together. There's just all of this camaraderie that happens. And then when you get out and you place yourself into, you know, civilian world and you're in just a regular neighborhood and there's not a lot of people that can, you know, relate to what you had been through, mm-hmm. it becomes very difficult. You feel alone. And then when you combine that alone feeling with depression and anxiety and post-traumatic stress, and then what I, you know, talk a lot about was specifically with veterans and with men in general, is a lack of purpose. When you're in the military, you had that sense of purpose. You had a mission. You had, you know, you had all the different things that you're goal oriented. When you get out of the military, sometimes you lose that sense of purpose, and without that sense of purpose, you feel lost. Mm-hmm. And when you start feeling lost, that's when dark things can happen. And I feel like that's where I was. I was lost. I lacked purpose, and I had to find it. And it wasn't, again, until me and my ex split. And then my daughter was two at the time. So not only am I splitting with the person I loved and was married to, but also now I'm a single father and I have to figure this out. Right. So it was a lot there. So I think I had my come to Jesus mirror moment where I had to look myself in the mirror and say, what kind of example am I providing for my daughter? And what kind of a man am I becoming? What kind of a father am I becoming? What kind of friend? What kind of family? You know, all the different things. And that's the kick in the butt I needed to go find help and really talk to people. And that's when I reached out to the VA and went through a VA therapist and really started to reach out and do those kind of things. And then I had to get myself back on track fitness wise, because in the military, you're waking up at 6 o'clock every morning, 5:30 in the morning, doing PT. It's very physically, a lot of your job is physically oriented. You're always moving stuff around. Mm-hmm. And I was in the best shape of my life during that time. And then I let myself go when I got out. So I'm not only looking at myself in the mirror and saying I'm a mess mentally, but I'm also a mess physically at that point. And I think the two are very related. And so I remember, you know, the first thing I did was I found a Groupon deal for a Spartan race that was local to in Virginia. And I said, you know what, it's $30. Let's go out and run this Spartan race. It was obstacle course. It was kind of the things you did in the military. It was like, oh, we get to run in the mud and jump over things and right. do sports type stuff. And I just remember, jumping on a treadmill for the first time and running. I think my first mile that I did on the treadmill was something like 14 minutes. I was 50, 60 pounds overweight. I got off the treadmill after a mile, just out of breath, just horrible shape. And then I did that first Spartan race. And I remember struggling mightily. I remember doing the bucket carry. It's like a 40, 50 pound bucket. And I dropped it on the ground at one point and just sat on it and just felt sorry for myself. And then I just had to kick myself in the butt and pick it back up, cross the finish line. And I remember just feeling this sense of, all right, I can do better. And I think that drove me to to start scheduling things and putting things on the calendar to do different types of races. So I did a lot of, I was doing the obstacle course race a lot, thing a lot in the beginning. I was doing a lot of the Spartan race, obstacle course racing type stuff. And eventually over a course of about a year or two, I had gone from a guy who finished 1,000th out of 1,000 people to a guy who was finishing in the top 10 in their pro elite heats and qualifying for, you know, national and world championships. So I think that that did a lot for me mentally. And then I think my daughter saw the hard work I was putting in and saw me change mentally, become more in tune with myself, more in love with who I was and the person looking back at me in the mirror. And that changed our relationship, because no longer was she looking at a dad that didn't want to get up off the couch and was, you know, always on his phone or always watching movies or something like that, and always had something in his mouth eating food, to a guy who was driven, who was becoming the example for her. And I think that changed our relationship when she was, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years old. And I think that's blossomed even more ever since. I tell the story all the time. I got a chance to climb Mount Kilimanjaro a couple of years ago. And when I climbed it, one of the promises she made me, you know, to give to her was, she wanted a picture of me above the clouds. And I got that opportunity after I summited Kilimanjaro to take a picture and wish her happy birthday, because I summited the day before her birthday. And we took a picture of me and the porters who had helped us climb above the clouds. And then when I came back off the mountain and came back home, she immediately wanted to climb her own mountain. So we went out to the Appalachian Mountains in Virginia and climbed Old Rag Mountain, which is a pretty difficult climb when she was just 7 years old. It's a 10-mile round trip hike, and you know, she did it all by herself. I didn't have to carry her at all at 7. So I think just those kind of things and being the example has made a direct impact on her life and how she attacks life and is goal oriented and does the thing. So to say I've made leaps and bounds, you know, grown leaps and bounds over the past, you know, 8, 9 years is an understatement.
Oh man, that's awesome. What a great story. That's really cool. I think that's a memory obviously that you'll have and she will have forever. It's just that picture and her wish for you to do that. And yeah, I mean, that's just remarkable. So good job, man. That's awesome.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. I think, you know, when it comes to your daughter, let's talk about a little bit about her. How old is she now? You said
she's 9.
Yep,
she turned 9 back in September.
Okay. So she's 9 years old. And she knows obviously some of the stories I'm sure of your military experience and all that. What would you say if she had expressed an interest in possibly going into the military? I know for us, my wife was not a big fan of me trying to encourage my boys to go into the military. She did not want our boys to go through that struggle, military is, being in the military is hard, and dangerous. For us, it was not a conversation that was very well liked by my wife. But you know, if my boys did express that they wanted to go in, I'm sure my wife would do everything she could to discourage them from going in. But I think she would allow them to fulfill whatever it is that they wanted to do, as far as you know, giving their time to the service. Well, how about your daughter? When it comes to girls, it's a little bit tougher. It's a little bit more of a challenge for females. I know things are changing and things have changed over the last 5 to 10 years. Things have been changing with women being in the military. But what about you? Yeah. And what about your ex-wife? I mean, how would she feel if your daughter expressed that?
That'd be a hard no on that side. I know that for certain. I wouldn't discourage her at all. I tend to encourage her in whatever she wants to go after in life. I do have concerns based on just her being a female going into the military and the different obstacles and different things they face, that women face, that I observed when I served in the military. So yeah, I guess short answer would be I wouldn't discourage her, but also I think I would definitely have a long talk with her about if she expressed that interest, what she could be potentially facing. It's much different. I think I've talked to a lot of friends that have boys, and their conversations are a lot different. I really haven't broached the topic with her at all about wanting to serve and everything. So I think that's a topic that eventually may come. She's definitely been interested in what I've done in the military. I have a kind of a little man cave room where I've got most of my awards and things hung up, and she's asked questions about different things. I try to be as honest with her as possible about my experiences in the military and how they impacted me. Right now, I think she's just a little too young to really absorb and understand a lot of it. But as she gets older, I think, if she comes to me and says, hey, this is an option that I want to explore, I'd be more than encouraging to her. But also, you got to be real. You have to be very honest, especially as a veteran, somebody who has served, with what you experience. And I know times do change and things have been updated in the military curriculum and everything else to help with women serving. But yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, is just encouragement, but honesty and really helping them understand what they're getting into.
Yeah. I think that's the message for parents. If parents out there, that if you have a son or a daughter for that matter, that are interested in possibly pursuing a military career. That may be a conversation. If you're a parent that is a veteran and you have that experience, you can have that open and honest conversation about what, being in the military is like, and the pros and cons of it. I mean, there are some cons of being in the military. There really are. However, if you're a parent that is not a veteran and you have no experience when it comes to the military, and you have a son or a daughter that is expressing interest in being in the military, I would highly recommend that you have them, and you as well, I guess, you have them speak to somebody that has military experience, a veteran, somebody that has been in the military, that knows the ins and outs of what it's like to be in the military. And then also you want to consider the different branches as well. Some branches are a little bit easier to be in. Some branches are a little bit tougher to be in. Some branches take better. I mean, for me, for example, if I were to encourage my boys to go in the military and they had a desire to go in, I would probably push them towards the Air Force side, because Air Force tends to take care of their military personnel a little bit better than others. Right. So Marines are a little bit harder on you. But Air Force, man, they have the best of everything. So I would probably encourage them to take the Air Force side, Air Force.
Well, yeah. You make a good point too, because I have a lot of female friends that are veterans. I have female friends that have served in the Marine Corps and had, loved their experiences and everything. So I think, find somebody who, I think this is any profession. If when you're young and you're high school, college age, find somebody who's done what you want to do and been successful at it, and find a mentor, find somebody who's done something and attach, your to their hip and ask questions and really deep dive into what you're getting yourself into. Because I think a lot of things can be either glamorized and it's not really what you expected to be when you get in to a certain career field, or certain things can be demonized. The military gets that a lot, where there's certain aspects of the military that people really focus on that aren't probably the cons to being in the military, mm-hmm. Versus the pros. And so finding somebody who's been there, done that in that career field that you want to be in, and encouraging your child to talk to mentors and do internships and do those kind of things in those career fields to really understand what they're getting themselves into is, I think, critical to helping them really decide. And I've tried to do that with my nephew, who just started his freshman year in college. Really just helping him understand, okay, if this is what you really want to do and this is what you want to get your degree in, go find somebody that's done it versus just being taught by a professor. Go find somebody who's been the doer versus the teacher and really understand what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny that you bring up your nephew, because my nephew he was kind of, I don't want to say lost, because that's not the appropriate word, but he didn't really know what he wanted to do with his life after high school. Wasn't really a college, didn't really have any interest in going into college, but he just didn't have any direction as to what he wanted to do with his life, and decided, because his older sister's husband is an ex-Marine, so he's a veteran, and then he knows obviously about me being his uncle, who's a Marine, he considered the military, and he had a conversation. He called me up one day and asked me my experience about the military and what it was like to be in the Marines and all that. And the next thing I know, he's enlisted and he's headed in down to boot camp in Camp Pendleton. And so he graduated boot camp over the summer. And then did his military in the Marines. You do your boot camp and then you do 30 days military combat training. And then once you're done with that, then you go to your MOS school, and MOS school is just your job, what you're going to be trained for in your job. So he went to his job school, which is in Texas. So right now he's in Texas going through that to be a firefighter in the Marine Corps, which is really cool. And so he's loving it. He's gotten a lot out of it. He, you know, obviously I wrote him letters and stuff like that when he's in boot camp. I got to go down and to his boot camp graduation, which was really cool. So I'm really proud of him and the steps that he's taken to do something with his life and to what better way than to give back to the country by serving in the military. So listen, this episode's not about military. It really isn't. It's about being a dad. And he's just, I just like talking to other vets and their experience and stuff like that. But you know, for him, I mean, your daughter, she's young when you and your now ex split up. How's that relationship been? I know that's hard for parents. That's a dynamic that we could talk about for hours as far as the relationship between an ex or a husband and a wife when they separate and the impact that it has on your daughter.
Yeah. So, again, it happened relatively young. But the one promise, and I see it a lot with, you know, different relationships that have children involved, is a lot of times they'll let jealousy, they'll let, you know, hatred, all those kind of different things impact the child, like the parenting of the child. The child had nothing to do with the relationship ending in most cases, 99.9% of the cases. Right. It was something wrong with the relationship. And so with us, we had our differences in the relationship. We recognized them. We decided it would be much better to see our daughters see us happier apart than would be kind of struggling and trying to figure out what life would look like not particularly well together. Mm-hmm. So we made that decision and we decided to move our separate ways. But in moving our separate ways, we also understood that 100% of our effort would be on and focus would be on doing the best we could to raise our daughter with values and with the best possible opportunities available. And we knew to do that, we'd have to work together. And so we split time with doing custody 50-50 primarily. I get her half the week. My ex does the other half of the week and we flip-flop weekends and we make it work. So for my daughter, we're not, mommy and daddy aren't together, but we work together enough that we have a great co-parenting relationship where it's not this thing where it's like, oh, I'm with daddy and I shouldn't bring up mommy, or I'm with mommy and I shouldn't bring up daddy. It's, she can call us anytime. We co-parent very well. We work together to make sure that she is taken care of. And so, that's the best piece of advice I could give people, that if you are in a relationship that is, at a point where you're deciding to go your separate ways, definitely don't hold whatever happened in the relationship against your child. You got to work together in order to make for the best possible situation for your child as they grow older. And one of the biggest things that I talk about a lot is the fatherlessness crisis we have in our country, mm-hmm. and how fatherlessness ends up leading to other things in life that are potentially impacting our societies, our community, our country as a whole. And so when you look at, you know, the people that are in prison, the people that join gangs, those kind of things, the most of those prison cells are filled with individuals that came from a family that didn't have a father. Same thing with gangs. When you look at gang members, a lot of gang members came from families that did not have a father. And then when you have a figure, a father-like figure, which is a gang leader, come into their life and provide them with some level of patriarch, you know, leadership, mm-hmm. they tend to go fold into that gang or whatever they're looking at. So when relationships end, a lot of times fathers find a way out. And that should not be the case. We have to be, remain fathers in our children's lives, and we have to be present and accountable for, and it's just not happening in our country right now. I at least, and from my perspective, men are doing a horrible job of, once relationships end, or just, you know, getting someone pregnant and then disappearing. You know, I have family members that are, you know, key examples of that, where they've had a child and the father's never been present in that child's life, and the child had to rely on my father, my brother, me, to kind of have that father-like figure in their life. And so that's the biggest piece of advice I give to dads out there, and the you know, other fathers, is if you're going through that type of situation where there is a separation that's involved, work with your significant other to make sure you're present in their lives, and that you don't get left out, and that you don't run.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Listen, parents, dads, you're watching this. Let me tell you something right now. It is your kids, the kids that you have, the child, the children that you have, did not pick you as a parent, did not pick you as their father, did not pick you as their mother. The Lord gave them to you to bless and to take care of. And that's your responsibility, to raise those children under the Lord's eyes, to raise those children in his home, and raise them up to be good human beings. And it's your responsibility as a dad or as a mom, it is your responsibility, whether you're in a relationship or not, to care for that child, be there for that child, be the provider for that child, be the guidance for that child, be the director of that child's life until they're old enough to take care of themselves and can manage on their own and living a productive life. So it is your responsibility as a parent to do that, regardless if you're in a relationship or not. So if you and your spouse, moms, you and your husband are going through a separation right now, do whatever you have to do to put the egos aside, check yourself, and take care of that child, even when you're not in a relationship, because that child's well-being is what comes first as a priority. Not you, not the ex, not how can I make them jealous? How can I get back at them? How can I, no, all that stuff needs to be put aside. The child needs to come first, period. That's me getting
couldn't have said it better. Couldn't have said it better there.
I'm glad that you and your ex are co-parenting well. That's one of the things that is so important. You know, fortunately for me, my wife and I, you know, we've been together for a long time, and we have no intentions on splitting. We have a good relationship. Yeah. But I will say this, our relationship is a work in progress. I mean, it's we are constantly working at it. We are constantly working at it. We have a marriage therapist that we see every single month that we call our marriage coach. We read in a marriage book all the time together. We are spending time together constantly. We are constantly working at our marriage to make sure that it remains healthy. And listen, we butt heads. Yes, we get into arguments. Yeah, yeah. Yes, we have disagreements. We make sure to come back and be centered with each other, because it's important for us to do that for our boys. And it's important for us to stay, we committed to each other. And that's the bottom line. We committed to each other. So,
yeah. Yeah. You bring up a good point, because you mentioned earlier just the physical things that I do that are good examples for my daughter, but it's also the other things that I do for her to try to be a good example of everything from how a man should treat a woman, mm-hmm. how she should be respected, those kind of different things that she can take on and live life with. Because one of those famous sayings is you can't prepare the road for the child, but you can prepare the child for the road ahead. Mm-hmm. And that's all you can do. You can't helicopter parent and figure out, you know, how to protect them every step of the way. You have to give them the skills to be able to navigate life. And so, you know, we have daddy-daughter date night every Friday night. That is a priority. That's something that we do every Friday night. And we make time for that so that we have, you know, those 2-3 hours. We get dinner together. We go get ice cream together. We do something together where we can talk about our week. We put the phones aside in most cases. We work through, you know, life together and talk about what's going to happen next week and those kind of things. And then, she knows the sidewalk rule, for instance, and when she's walking next to daddy, she knows to walk on the opposite side of the sidewalk, the traffic's on. And so just those kind of different things so that she understands how to be treated and, again, how to be respected. And then the other thing, the other life skills that she's going to need to move forward. And then one of the other things that happened recently was I've started to see somebody very seriously in my life, and incorporating her into the family, you know, as a whole, because not only is she going to be another strong female role model for my daughter, but she's also going to be somebody who I can work with together to show what a loving relationship looks like and how daddy treats somebody in a relationship. And then she can glean that as an example for how she should be treated and things like that. So you bring up a great point, just about being working on things and being an example in relationships and in life in general, just not doing the Mount Kilimanjaros of the world and the 100-mile races, but also how do I do basic life skills and teach her the basic life skills that allow her to navigate life successfully.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask you one last question. And yep. This is going to be a tricky one. This is going to be a tough one. Now, you might like it. You might not like it. But I like to ask dads this question. And often I coach a lot of dads and I do ask them this question. Actually, I ask them to ask their kids this question. But if I were to talk to your daughter right now, mm-hmm. and I would ask her, tell me something about your dad, what would you hope that she would say about you?
Oh, I guess the biggest thing is that I have her back. Like in the military, we talk about always having each other's sixes. That's what I would love for her to say is I have her back no matter what. I have her six. She knows I'm always there for her and that she can come to me with anything. And we have, you know, that relationship, that bond that allows for her to be open and honest with me and confide in me and be able to, you know, let me know the struggles that she has in life, because I didn't necessarily have that relationship with my father where I couldn't go to him with, I didn't feel like I could go with to him with my life's problems and things, because I came from my father and my grandfather and the men in my family were very hard, very, you know, post depression era kind of men, where having a daughter now, I don't know what the dichotomy would have been if I would have had a son first, but having a daughter, I've had to learn empathy. I've had to learn patience. I've had to learn the things that I probably wouldn't have necessarily tried to learn or attempted if I had a son, maybe. And that's maybe unfair, but that's just in retrospect, me looking at myself. So yeah, I think to answer that question, daddy's got her back and I'm always going to be there for her.
That's great. Well, I encourage you to ask your daughter that, maybe when you're on your, daddy daughter date tonight, ask her that, and see what she says. But, you know what? It's funny. You had a daughter first, and maybe there's a reason why you had a daughter first. Maybe it is because you needed to learn empathy. You need to learn patience. You needed to learn those types of things because you didn't have that growing up as a child yourself. So maybe that's why you had the daughter first, who knows, but, needless to say, I'm glad that you have the relationship that you have with her. I'm glad that you have the relationship that you have with your ex as well. And that co-parenting situation works well for you. Jason, I want to ask you, if my listeners want to look you up, learn a little bit more about you, best places for them to do that.
Yeah. The only place I really am active is on Instagram, and it's at J Floyd Wood, just the letter J Floyd Wood, on Instagram. And then, as we continue to grow this thing, I'm looking at creating a website next year in May on Memorial Day. I'm looking to break a world record in an attempt to raise money for a veteran nonprofit called the Independence Fund. We're going to be flipping a 220-pound tire for 24 straight hours to try to get about 7 miles. And in doing so, we're looking to raise about $20,000 to $25,000 for the Independence Fund. So website should be coming up shortly. I'll be posting that to the social media site, Instagram, and then going from there. But yeah, looking for big things out of 2024.
Awesome. Well, Jason, listen, man, it's been an honor, a pleasure to kind of meet you virtually, I guess, finally. Yeah. You know, we've been connected for a while, but I'm really looking forward to growing this friendship and continuing on this journey together. And I'm looking forward to continuing the relationship. So thank you very much for being on, brother. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Brian. I really appreciate being on. And yeah, I encourage everybody to listen to all your back catalog and everything else. You put out good content, and I'm here for it.
Awesome. Well, listen, guys, this has been another awesome episode of Dad Up. Thanks again to my good friend, Jason Wood, for being on. If you want to check out what he's doing, make sure you go to his Instagram page. The link is in my show notes, as just like every episode, the links are in my show notes. So if you want to check out what he's doing, please do that. And as always, if you have not yet subscribed to my YouTube channel, make sure you do that so you don't miss any of the awesome guests that I have on each and every week. And as always, I look forward to seeing you all on the next episode of Dad Up. Wow, another amazing episode in the books. So much was shared, and I'm truly grateful my guest was able to pour into you to help you elevate your dad game and really dad up. Make sure you bang that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. And while you're here, please don't forget to leave me a rating and a review. I always appreciate the feedback. Also, did you know you can watch the video interview of this episode? You can by simply going to my YouTube channel at Dad Up Podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe to my channel. And one last thing, don't forget, your role as a dad is one of the most important roles you have. So if you need a little help or have questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me on my website at daduptribe.com or at my Instagram page at Dad Up Podcast. Until next time, everyone, Dad Up.